Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. This one's going to be a little bit different. If you're out there and you're a contractor and you're looking to make more money, I believe those who have a security clearance make way more money. And we have a guy who wrote a book on how to, all right, you ready for this? How to get U.S. government contracts and classified work. A contractor's guide to bidding on classified work and building a compliant security program to win federal contracts. The author, Jeffrey W. Bennett, is here. Thanks so much for being here, sir.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for inviting me. I'm really excited about this opportunity to talk about the book, talk about getting a security clearance and whatever else questions you might have.
Well, the security clearance always fascinated me, and I always thought that it was an insane process. It was really only for people who are part of the military. And I know a guy who got a security clearance, and it was a lot easier for him to walk in and do business with certain aspects of the government. And it was sort of like a VIP line. I'm thinking about like when you go to an amusement park, you go to the front of the line, if you will. So tell us a little bit about the genesis of this book. What made you want to write this?
Okay. Honestly, I was thinking small when I first wrote it. My first book was a book on a certification for people who are security managers who protect classified information. There's an actual certification for that. And I wrote a study guide for that. And then I said, oh, well, what next? And then I was thinking, okay, well, then next will be, we'll create a way to show them how to protect their classified information, you know, treat or help new security managers be able to learn how to protect classified information. And then that book, actually, I rewrote it, reorganized it for business owners who wanted to get classified contracts. And so then I wrote the book, Insider's Guide to Security Clearances, to more focus on employees who want to get a clearance. And one of the things I wanted to point out is it's like circular logic. You can't get a security clearance unless you have a classified contract or working on a classified contract.
Wow.
And it's hard to get that contract without the clearance.
So wait a second. That sounds almost counterintuitive. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? That's how it goes. And so you say something in the summary, individuals with a security clearance make 15% more, right, than people without it. So is it because maybe you can actually bid higher? As long as you have a security clearance, you might be able to get bigger contracts, or you're going to accept more contracts. Maybe it's both.
Yeah. Maybe it's both. It's the type of work that the government is paying for you to do. And sometimes these works, you know, engineering, a lot of people can get clearances in different types of job categories. For example, engineering, as I mentioned, production, writing. I was trying to think of another one. Oh, yeah, janitorial services, office cleaning. They all get a clearance. It just depends on the requirement of the work performance. And so when the government writes a contract, if they are going to provide or require services that requires a security clearance, they'll give that contract to a business. And the business will either have a clearance as a business, and then their employees will have a clearance that's coordinated with the business.
Wow.
Right. So the business has a clearance, and then they hire employees and they get the employees' security clearances.
Man, you make me think of, I have a lot of clients in the cleaning space. They have many cleaning businesses. Usually it's commercial or residential, and never even think about that. If you get a security clearance, you could potentially clean offices when it comes to government work, government buildings, and that will elevate you. So when I first started thinking about this book, I'm like, oh, well, because for engineers or for people who are doing something for the military, right? That's what you automatically think of. But those individuals who are in the million-dollar circle or are listening on this podcast who have cleaning services, it's in your best interest to at least have this as something that differentiates you from your competitors, which will give you such a boost. Am I right?
Yeah, that's correct. And but it's not the matter of fact that you can walk in and get a clearance. The first task is to find somebody that has a need for cleaning services and a clearance. Many times, if for example, we'll just talk about cleaning services. If somebody with a cleaning service desires to get a clearance, then the first part is find somebody with a need.
Got it.
Right. And the cleaning service would get vetted as a company. Are they in good standing? And if they are, they may be sponsored for a clearance, and then that will give them their security clearance and the ability to go into a protected area to provide those cleaning services. We find that with facilities management, you know, air conditioning repairing, any type of service, any type of building, everybody has specific types of needs. Electricians, everything else in a service industry may require a security clearance. And the first step is to apply for the job. And then if a clearance is needed, the sponsoring company or the sponsoring government organization will put that individual or company up for a security clearance.
Got it. Okay. So how do you find these? Is there a website that you can search for? Because I'm thinking of two or three guys right now, if they were to find a job, is there a certain website or how do they find these jobs? And number two, what would be is there an application? Is there some type of sort of like fast track? So what would be the process?
Okay. So if you're an individual, you might want to go to clearancejobs.com, and that's where you are an individual looking for to work for another company that, and you may require a security clearance. So clearancejobs.com is another one.
Got it.
USAjobs.com is the other one if you're looking for a government job.
Wow. Okay. USAjobs.com.
Right.
Got it.
That's correct.
All right. So they find them there. All right. Now they apply, like you said, and then if there's a need, there's got to be the, and I'm assuming this is not overnight, right? These clearances potentially take, I don't know, is it 3 months, 6 months?
Could be more.
Yeah. So yes, it depends. And what does that all include? So how does that all flow? And I mean, how many background checks are being, you know, reviewed, I guess, when it comes to employment and family and friends? I mean, it's pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you apply for a job and you don't have a clearance, you may be able to get hired tentatively based on getting that security clearance.
Got it.
Right. So don't let not having a security clearance stop you from applying for a job. If you can sell your job skills and sell yourself as a trustworthy person, you might get your foot in the door. Many companies have that pre-screening process, right? That background check. But the government has a more in-depth background check that might go 10 years into your work history, your education history, and where you may have lived. And they'll go through an investigation process that could be rather lengthy. There are opportunities that you could get an interim clearance until that full investigation is complete. So you may be able to start right away, depending on the work. And so the company takes you at risks, gives you something to do, and pays you until your clearance comes in, and then you can perform on that contract.
Hmm. And they're looking at your social media, your finances, your credit score, your employment, right? I mean, it depends on the position and depends on the level of clearance, but you're talking about a thorough search, right? So it's everything.
Correct. Yeah. The form that they use is called a standard form 86. You can go and Google SF86 and you can actually download a form. That's not where you would actually fill the form out. You'll do it online on a government website. But that form, reason I'm mentioning it right now is if you're interested in going that route, that form has actual questions that you will be asked. Relationships, where you've lived, where you've worked. And the reason I ask people to download it ahead of time is so that you'll have all the information together, all your names, points of contacts, their phone numbers, my dad was in the Army and we moved every 3 years. And so that was a lot for me to gather the first time I went through the process. Addresses, phone numbers, names. But it's not always that hard. But for somebody like me who moved a lot, it is hard to get together. So if you've been thinking about it and you've applied for a job and been accepted, it's a good idea to download that form and start pre-filling it out so you have all the information and references on hand. It takes a while to do that.
Got it. And so it's worth it simply because if you're going to do it over and over, and if it's not just a one-off job, and this is a career that you're going, I would assume that even just by taking a role or taking a position in the government, having that security clearance will help you outside of the government. Is that right? Have you noticed any type of social credit, if you will, or business credit that kind of lends to other parts of many different industries? Like, have you seen that if you have a security clearance and you've done work with the government, you might be able to raise your prices because you're more established than your competitors? Anything like that?
Yeah. It's possible. The direct correlation to working for the government and working outside of the government would be working for businesses that are clear, that are defense contractors, that you can think of, those defense contractors. There are defense contractors that have 1 to 2 employees, and there are defense contractors that have thousands of employees. You know, they build tanks, they build airplanes, and you can get a job with them with that security clearance. You mentioned cleaning businesses. Now, businesses go through a different process to get a clearance. Again, they need to be contracted by the government or subcontracted to a defense contractor. And the first step there is to register as a defense contractor at SAM.gov.
All right. SAM, S-A-M?
SAM.gov. That's you put that in there. And it'll lead you, and you can apply as a defense contractor. And there you need your articles of incorporation or your LLC information, and you get registered as a government contractor.
Well, what about the employees? I would assume that they have to go through some type of scrutiny also. Is that right?
Not just yet, just the company. Okay. And the company key managers, right? They'll need points of contact. Now that just gets you ability to get to become a defense contractor. Now to get that clearance to be a clear defense contractor, you would need to bid on a government contractor that requires a security clearance. And so then the business goes through that process that you're talking about. And then the key employees go through that process. And then if you hire employees, they will need to go through their separate process that we talked about earlier to get their individual security clearance.
Got it.
So now, facility clearances and personnel clearances.
There are a few people that I can think of right now that really don't post anything on social media. And they have always told me it's because of their security clearance. There are certain things they can and can't say, obviously. But, when it comes to political views, have you seen anybody do something that really does make it very hard to get a security clearance that maybe is a big red flag when it comes to putting out your true beliefs, showing everything about your life, anything that you might be able to say, hey, don't do this if you're thinking about it?
Yeah. I can't think of anything in particular except having those associations with governments or organizations who want to overthrow the US government. That would always be a red flag.
Yeah, I would say so, right?
Right.
Yeah. So so when it comes to political views, not necessarily a bad thing, right? If you're a major Trump supporter and you're applying for the government, it's not going to be, you don't think that's going to hurt you in this administration or vice versa?
I don't think so. It should not. I think where people get in trouble is when they start going into the areas of, again, whether or not they're going to overthrow the government, or I think we still live in a nation of free speech. Everything is good. But once you start, I guess, and that's up to people to find what dangerous speech is, that's where you might get in trouble.
Got it. Interesting. Okay. And so the levels of security clearance, you have it in here. This book also covers protecting classified information that a company will receive and security clearance levels. There are a few. And can you just kind of run through them? And so people understand that there are probably many, many, many security levels, right?
Yeah. I want to first say that there's nothing classified in my books. It's all open source information. So if anybody's listening. So there are three levels of classification. Confidential, which is the lowest level.
Okay.
Secret and top secret.
Oh, okay. Just the three levels, basically. I've heard of even levels of, they call it Q, right? That Q is the highest level of clearance. I may be wrong about that, but I don't know. So there's probably many within those three sections.
Yes,
is that right?
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Good deal. And so if you're out there, you're probably just going to get the first level, right? That's what you're going for the average person listening.
No, actually, that's a good question. It just depends on, you know, when I was 18 and joined the Army, I got a top secret. It depends on what your job is going to be. And each level has a different background investigation requirement.
Got it. Yeah, my dad was in the Navy and he did Morse code, and he was always, he told us that he had a top secret clearance. And this is back in Vietnam, obviously. But I found that interesting that, you know, you don't have to be like government high end, top end person to have a top secret clearance, right? So it depends on the role. And so that's how you basically, I guess, get selected. And so give us your background. So you're in the military, and now it seems like you help individuals get government contracts. So can you kind of give us the rundown of how you got to here?
Yeah. I've had several jobs in the government. I was in the military. And then when I got out, I worked for the government. And then I became an employee of government contractors. And one of those roles has been a position called a facility security officer. And they're responsible for establishing security programs in defense contractor organizations. They're like your security officer, but they protect anything from information to items to facilities. And so I've had a lot of experience there. And then a couple of years ago, I broke off and started my own consulting company. And I consult clients on how to get their security clearances. I also help to develop security programs in organizations. I have organizations that are defense contractors, that are healthcare providers. And so I look at where security officers or security personnel potentially look at external threats to their organization. There's another factor too, looking at employees who may either on purpose or inadvertently go after your information. And we call that the insider threat. So we look at protecting sensitive information. We look at protecting it from external organizations as well as insider organizations. And I was just reading a good article in the New York Times from back in 2000, and this applies, you know, what I do applies to the commercial sector as well. I would love to get more business in the commercial sector where you want to protect your proprietary information and trade secrets. And that extends to some of those boring areas like logistics. And so there's a great article in the New York Times about the two types of pizza, microwavable pizza or oven-baked pizza, frozen pizza industries, and how DiGiorno was looking at Kraft and trying to figure out, you know, what they're doing. And so they hired a consultant to try to find out from their competitor what their production rates were. And if you ask somebody what your production rates are, they're not going to tell you. But if you ask them questions to low-level employees, like, well, how many boxes are you buying? How many boxes are you buying? How big is your refrigerator? Those types of things. And so learning to have your employees understand, you know, they're part of the company, but it doesn't mean they need to know everything about the company, and they should know who they should disclose information to. It's like my children, they're part of my family, but I'm not going to tell them everything. Some things, I don't know if I can trust them with certain information. I know they don't want to cause me harm, but they may tell somebody something that they shouldn't know about our family.
Wow. Yeah. It may seem insignificant to them, but you're saying that certain information is extremely valuable and individuals will pay heavy for that information. Mm-hmm. That's why it has to be protected. Yeah. And it's really to protect them too, right? From having too much information.
Absolutely. So I always recommend a robust discipline of identifying what that information is, marking it accordingly. Is it proprietary? Is it, you know, should people in accounting understand what's going on in logistics? Maybe, maybe not. But it's important to identify that and train employees on what they should share.
So when you do business with the government and you're a contractor, is there something that's written down that you can't ever express anything that you've seen or heard or saw, or, you know, learned for X amount of years or ever? Or what does that look like? I mean, is there like a declassifying, timeline? Anything that you could share? Because I would like to, anybody about to get into this world who doesn't know anything about it, what does it look like once you're in it and then even when you're out of it?
Yeah. Well, you sign kind of a non-disclosure agreement when you first get your clearance. It's called Form 328. Everything's got a form number, right? And you're agreeing that you're going to be receiving sensitive information. And in that agreement, it tells you, you know, when you've identified or received sensitive information, you protect it for the rest of your life. We as employees don't make that decision of what is sensitive or not sensitive. The government makes that, and we're required as responsible employees to protect it.
Got it. So it's forever for the most
part. It's forever. Yeah.
Wow.
That's a good practice. Just keep it forever. It's not, you're not.
Don't say anything, right?
Yeah. And so they'll tell you, you know, you can tell what you're doing. You can talk about your job, but you can't talk about specifics. And I don't ever think it's ever a great idea to tell everything about what you do, right? Just for personal reasons, business reasons. And you should understand, like, you know, if you do business, I'm sure you have vendors or other business organizations that you have NDAs with. You probably don't have a timeline on those, and you're hoping your trusted partners will protect your information and the things that you've decided were sensitive about your business.
Well, technology is getting crazier and crazier. We have AI, we have devices. People say this is not listening to me while it's turned off, but I believe it is. So whenever it comes to working in the government, are there any things that you're noticing that are becoming common practice? No phones allowed, no devices whatsoever. Is there anything that's pretty prevalent that, you know, people should be aware of?
Yeah. Typically, you know, have sensitive conversations in areas that are approved for it. For example, you know, this can go even to the boardroom anywhere. If you want to have a sensitive conversation, leave the phones outside, as you just mentioned. You know, smart TVs, smart devices are everywhere. Right? And so, you know, unplug, disconnect, you know, get your notebooks and pencils and go brainstorm your next business venture. And you know that nobody's listening to you while you're doing it.
Yep. I remember dating a girl who is in the government, and I remember her saying certain things to me like, you know, your phone is always listening to you, even though it's, you know, turned off and all this stuff. And this one programs could be shut off. Everything's listening to you. So, you know, there are certain trainings within the government that probably show this, and the average person has no idea. So I would think that the average person about to get into the government world might have zero clue on what to expect and maybe certain practices. So pretty fascinating.
Yeah, there's lots of training that goes involved. There's required training annually, every 2 years, so that employees understand what their requirements are as far as protecting sensitive information.
Yeah. So is that required too? That was my next question, is that if you have a security clearance and you're doing work, are you required to do some type of training throughout the year or twice a year or anything like that?
Yeah, as I mentioned, the facility security officer earlier, they're responsible for that program, and they are required to ensure their employees are trained once a year. And it's called security awareness training, and most organizations understand what security awareness training is, you know. And so, yeah, you're trained all the time on your job and how to identify and protect sensitive information.
Wow. And so how long have you been in this world? You said you started at 18 in the military. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
What made you want to join in the first place? Was it just following in your father's or grandfather's footsteps, or did you just have a want to, you know, be a part of the you know, keeping the country safe?
Well, yeah, a little bit of both. Usually you join something for personal reasons. I did it for the college fund. And I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I ended up staying in 22 years until, you know, I ended up staying in. And while I was in the Army, I got my college up all the way up to grad degree. And I had some fun experiences, got to travel the world. And it was a different time when I was in, you know, I was in the 80s and 90s, and really enjoyed that career and enjoyed the choice I made. Then when I got out, there were some there's some jobs that I could do. I was in transportation, for example, and so there's a lot of opportunities for transportation jobs on the outside. And but I chose to go into the security side because I enjoyed that aspect too. I just felt like I had a lot of security experience being in the Army.
Yeah, an individual that I know of is in the cybersecurity world. Is that probably a much harder part of the government to get into than maybe something else because of the sensitive information? So depends on what it is, but cybersecurity, most likely, if you're out there listening, that might be the hardest to get into. Is that right?
I don't know if it's hardest to get into, but I see a lot of opportunities there in the network and information system building. For example, protecting enterprise networks from hacking, or establishing networks to house sensitive information. IT, cyber, big growth opportunities there.
And I'm looking at your book, chapter 7. I mean, this is very, very, very detailed. And so like chapter 7, it talks about, you know, meetings and visits, right? End of day security checks. Non-possessing facilities, possessing facilities, magnets, and reminder that you're going through pretty much the life of performing on a classified contract. So if you're looking to do it, everything, the game plan is within your book, right? I mean, you're not leaving anything out. You're giving them the roadmap of, number one, getting the clearance, but also what your life would look like. Is that right?
That's correct. You've got to plan, and there could be a lot of overhead costs. If you have to buy alarms, if you have to buy safes, if you have to hire additional employees to manage it. So, you know, count the costs before you get started. And my book helps you to do that.
So is there anything that you've seen where people try to do, you know, they try to go outside the boundaries, and then there were some punishments, I guess you could say, issues in their business or their life if they do anything that goes against what they signed up for? Have you seen that firsthand?
No, I've seen some people make some mistakes and have to get administratively, we just call it administratively disciplined. That FSO, facility security officer, is required to establish layers of discipline for people who commit security violations. It could be anywhere from not doing your end-of-day checks to just simple things. And so the intent is, if somebody commits a violation, to give them some retraining and get them back to work. But you have to remind them, like, if you commit a security violation and you lose sensitive information or cause it to be accessed in an unauthorized manner, you will be held responsible for it, which could be anywhere from firing to losing your clearance or jail time, as we've seen people do in the news.
Yeah. So that it can be very, very, I guess you could say, impactful to the business. I mean, you potentially could even lose your business license if you do it the wrong way. Is that right?
Yeah. And there is a government organization that inspects defense contractors and inspects they do a vulnerability inspection of, or an assessment of, their security program. So everybody's accountable.
So the pros, obviously, the money's great. You know, you're getting paid. Probably the security, right? You might have constant work ongoing. You have protection, right? You got the government on your side. You're a partner with the government, but there are some downsides. I would assume that, hey, you now have to have a different level of a standard. And then if you break it, you're going to suffer the consequences. So anything else that you could share to our audience so they kind of know before they take this step?
Yeah, compliance is a big thing. One of the things I do is help people remain in compliance with these standards, whether it's export compliance or compliance under a National Industrial Security Program. I help them do that, help them walk through it, and help them understand what their roles are and what the government is expecting of them.
The websites for them to get in touch with you or your company, I think you have two of them here. Is it thriveanalysis.com? Is that one of them?
Yeah, thriveanalysis.com. That is my consultant website. And the other one you might have listed as redbikepublishing.com.
No, I have NIS.
NISPALM Central.
NISPALM Central, yes.
Yeah. So those in the industry know that the NISPALM is the National Industrial Security Program Operating Manual. It's the government publication. And its shortcut is NISPALM. So NISPALM.com will bring you to my website that has my books and training that people can purchase and provide to their employees or just for themselves.
And so if you're going to get into this world, it is nice to have a consultant that pretty much educates them on what it's like before, during, and after. And so you mentor individuals who are pretty much taking this leap for the very first time. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I do that and also provide monthly services too. There are just a lot of questions as you've asked as well. And so it just helps to have somebody walk through this with.
And so you probably have many different clients, but who is the type of business that you work with more so than anything else? Are they, you know, engineering bolts? Are they cleaning services? Are they individuals who are building bridges? Like, who do you work with?
Yeah, all the above. Wow. Honestly, there are opportunities for clearances everywhere, and people will call me up. And most people that call me are about 10 employees or fewer. They're doing this for the first time. Sometimes opportunities arrive for established companies to get a classified contract. And so they'll call me and I'll help them out. They may be a little bit larger, maybe 10 to 20 employees. But for the most part, as I mentioned, some defense contractors have six or fewer employees doing good work, and they just, they have to perform on the contract as well as do the administrative work. And there are no additional employees for administrative work. They have to spread it amongst themselves. And so that's where I come in. Hey, I'm the subject matter expert in this area. I will walk you through this.
So is there anything, the average person out there listening is an entrepreneur. Many women, many men, I would think, and maybe I'm reading about this in the news, when it comes to certain practices with DEI and equality, is there any type of group of people that really has a great shot at getting contracts? Or is it basically whoever's the best in their field who offers the greatest service or product gets the contract? Or is there anything that you could share with our audience that you're seeing right now?
Sure. There's opportunities to certify. For example, my company is I always get the acronym wrong, Service Disabled Veteran Owned Small Business. There's women owned. There are different categories, minority categories as well. And the government is required to contract with these different categories. And again, I'm sorry, I don't have all those answers for you about the categories, but to your point, yes. If you fit a certain category, the government is looking to contract with you because there is a need to do so.
Got it. So what you're saying is that potentially the business or the contractor who's best suited for it might not get it, but it's based off of their certain allocations depending on for equality. Is that what you're saying?
Sometimes, yeah. They're always looking for the best provider. So I would say maybe even the best provider in that category.
Got it. Okay, maybe that's a good way to put it. That's the politically correct way to put it, for sure, no doubt. So interesting. Yeah, I always find that fascinating. I'm blown away because you see all these stories of everything that's happened with Boeing, and it's like, oh, well, quality might suffer if they try to focus on equality of outcome. So just trying to piece it all together, but it sounds like you're on the front lines of it all. So guys, this guy, I've never met anybody who's in this world. This is pretty fascinating. Jeffrey Bennett, the book is called How to Get U.S. Government Contracts and Classified Work, A Contractor's Guide to Bidding on Classified Work and Building a Compliant Security Program, Clearances, and Clear Defense Contractors. So is there a website or is there a social media channel that you recommend if anybody wants to get in touch with you directly? Are you on LinkedIn or X or Facebook or Instagram?
I'm terrible at that. I am on LinkedIn. And I could send you those links if that would be helpful. And I have a podcast channel.
Oh, what's the podcast?
And YouTube. DOD Secure.
DOD Secure. That's an easy one to remember. All righty. I didn't know that. Okay, that's not on the list here. Okay, so check out his podcast too. Do you put out a podcast a week? Are you pretty frequent with them?
I'm very undisciplined with
it. Well, you might have bigger and better things to work on than the podcast with all these crazy different roles you're probably playing. So totally understand. But it's on YouTube if we can want to look it up, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Cool. Jeffrey Bennett, I really appreciate your time, man. This is fascinating.
Well,
I don't know anything about this world. That's why I wanted to interview you on this.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity and best of success to Million Dollar Book.
Yeah. Yeah. So stay curious is really what I think the superpower, right? If I'm curious about different books, different authors, different messages and what's going on in the world, it allows me to see opportunity. And then if you take that opportunity and share it with the many, it's the Jim Rohn approach. Service to the many for service to the many leads to greatness. So Jeffrey Bennett, thank you so much. Remember, guys, a million dollar book will lead to a million dollar life. Right on.